Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Ayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur continues from the second line from the top at the end of the line on Daf Ayin. However, before we can proceed with the Gemara, it's necessary to just give a brief recap of the sugya in which we are in fact in the middle of. We saw in our last shiur at the bottom of Daf Samach Tes Omid Beis a machlokis between Rav Huna and Rabba concerning at what point is Kedushas Bechor, the sanctity of a firstborn animal, established. Rav Huna's approach was L'mafreya hu kadosh. Retroactively, we are to view things. Rabba says Mikan ulahaba hu kadosh. From we look at things from this point on till the end. In other words, the sanctity is not necessarily established by what happens at the beginning of the birth process, but what happens in the finality. The Gemara had introduced a topic or an example of where a firstborn male animal, which is generally speaking understood to be sanctified upon birth and presented to a kohen and then offered as a sacrifice, where one third of the birth started, and at that point he sold it to a Gentile. And as we discussed in our last shiur, if a Gentile is a partial owner of the Bechor, then the Bechor is exempt from being presented to the Kohen, and the Kedusha, the sanctity, doesn't set in. In this case, the Gentile was sold the first third that emerged. The continuation of the birth took place. According to Rav Huna, since the sanctity is determined limafreya, we look at things retroactively. So in that case, the Bechor will in fact be Kadosh, Rav Huna said, because when the majority comes out, we say that retroactively it was sanctified and could not be sold to a Gentile, that there was no entitlement to sell something that was already sanctified. And that's a function of looking at it in this retroactive fashion. According to Rabba, on the other hand, it's not sanctified because sanctity only takes place when the majority comes out. And since the sale took place before the majority came out, that was a legitimate sale. And the continued birth then has, in fact, a Gentile as a partial owner. The Gemara had also mentioned that this Machlokis Rav Huna and Rabba is consistent with another example in which they have a Machlokis. That was all featured in our previous shiur. So as we go on in the Gemara, we're going to be trying to bring sources to determine which Amoraic approach is to be accepted. The Rav Huna approach that says l'mafreya, we look at things retroactively, or the Rabba approach, which says we determine things from this point onwards. So the Gemara continues with a triangle, and the triangle signifies sources that we bring to prove one of these sides. Hamevakeres, hamemakshe leled, an animal that is giving birth to its firstborn, and it's coming out with difficulty, and it's not coming out in a smooth fashion. Bechor, the embryo firstborn, is coming out limb by limb. So this source teaches us mechatech aver aver umashlich liklovim. as it's coming out, he is cutting off limb by limb as the embryo, the firstborn, is emerging, and giving it to the dogs. Now, what are the circumstances here? My love, mechatech u'meniach. Is it not so that he is cutting off limb by limb and allowing the limbs to accumulate until rov is already outside in cut limb form? And even so, it says here, you can give it to the dogs. Now, if you are going to say that sanctity is determined retroactively, then how can you give this to the dogs? Yikover mi boyale. The halacha should be that you shall bury these limbs. Bury the limbs because they have sanctity, and obviously in limb form they can't be brought as a sacrifice, but the way you deal with something that has sanctity is by burying it. Now, it doesn't say that, though. It says you can give it to the dogs. This would be a kasha on Rav Huna. This would pose a challenge to the approach that says we look at things retroactively. Once again, here you have a situation where the majority is now outside in cut limb form, and we don't say that it's retroactively viewed as sanctified. But rather, what are we saying? As each limb came out, before the majority came out, there was no sanctity, and you were able to cut it, and there was no problem with that, and there would be no kedusha that settles upon these limbs. This we can see, by the way, if we look in Rashi, on the second line from the top, Mechatech u'meniach ad shiotzeh harov. He's cutting the limbs as they're emerging until the majority comes out. V'afagav shiotzeh harov, even though eventually the majority is now out, v'harei hachatichos lefonenu, and the pieces are in front of us, mashlicho leklovim, you can throw it to the dogs, indicating no sanctity. Yamris bishlamo mikano bohu kadosh. If you say very well that sanctity is determined only from this point onwards, then umekami yitzias rov lo kodosh, and prior to the emergence of the majority there is no sanctity, lo kodosh midi, then hanoch de ichtechu mekami hochi, the limbs that were cut off before the majority emerged, lo chola kedusha alaihu, no sanctity set upon them. Elo iamris de mafreya hu kadosh, but if you say sanctity sets in retroactively, ha kevon de rubo kamon, once we have a majority of the limbs in front of us, we would then say igloi milsa, it becomes clear retroactively, biyatzias harov, de meikora kadosh lahu, that at the point that the majority emerged, it's now retroactively sanctified. So how could you give it to the dogs? So at this point then, we have a difficulty for Rav Huna's position. The Gemara responds, Loi, hocha b'mayaskinon, the case here is b'mechatech u'mashlich. As each limb comes out, he cuts it off and feeds it to the dogs, so that when the majority, so to speak, has come out, there is nothing around for sanctity to set upon. And that's why he's able to give it to the dogs. However, if you have like the case we saw on Samach Tes, Rashi points out that a third came out, he sold it to the Gentile, and then another third came out, putting it over the majority mark, and everything is still around, then there is grounds for saying that retroactively it is sanctified, and that would undo the sale. Okay. So the Gemara goes on now, following this approach, that you want to say that really the case here is mechatech u'mashlich. However, had things been allowed to accumulate, the entire majority was in front of us, the first majority was in front of us, we would say then there's retroactive sanctity. Well, avol mechatech u'miniach mai, but the case, let us say, this very case where he cuts and leaves the limbs to accumulate, then what would you say? Ikover, then you would have to say, if you want to push this point of retroactive sanctity, then you'd have to say this pile of limbs that accumulated, forming the majority, you would have to bury them. Well, if that be the case, adetoni seifa, then instead of the final section of this source saying yotza rubo ikover veniftara min habachora, that if rov comes out and it's dead, then you shall bury it, and there is no, and subsequent births will not be Bechorah. Then instead of teaching a different case, namely where Rov came out, where the majority came out in one shot, and only then are you going to bury it? Let's just go over the a fine detail. In the case of Yotzerubo, where Rov came out and he cut it, then you shall bury it. Liflog v'lisni b'dibei. You could have stayed within the example of the Reisha, of his cutting limb by limb, and taught as follows. B'meh devar mamurim. When is it that you can give it to the dogs? B'mechatech u'mashlich ever ever. That's as each limb is coming out, you immediately give it to the dogs. Avol mechatech u'meniach. But here's the same case of cutting. However, letting them accumulate till it forms a rove, yikover. Then you will bury it. Now, it doesn't teach this. It must be that in order to come up with a case of Yikover, you'd have to say that the majority came out at once and then he cut it, indicating to us that there is no retroactive sanctity, namely that the case of Mechatech Umeniach would not have resulted in Yikover in having to bury, because there is no sanctity that sets in retroactively. The Gemara answers, in effect, to defend Rav Huna, Hochi Nami Ko'omar. That is the intent of this source. B'med v'amurim, when is there no sanctity and you can give it to the dogs? B'mechatech u'mashlich, where you cut off immediately and feed the limb to the dog, limb by limb, as it emerges. Avol, mechatech u'meniach. However, if you were to cut off limb by limb and not immediately feed it to the dogs, and the bechor would accumulate to a majority of limbs. Nase kimi shiyotza rubo v'kover. That would be no different than the case of a majority coming out in one shot and you cutting it off, and which would require me to bury it. And all of this is because there is kedusha l'mafreya. There is sanctity that sets in retroactively. As you can see, we have a new geometric form, in this case the diamond, and this is explained in the outside margin under our heading Nosei Mivneh in our Gemara markings. We attempt to provide topic headings that we call Nosei and structural notes that we call Mivneh. Sometimes we combine these notes into one note. In this case we see diamonds, and they appear, as you skim down the page, are quite a few of them, and in fact we have also a numbering system that accompanies this. To the immediate left hand side of the Gemara text you can see little numbers in diamonds indicating the number of them. What are they? So we look at our note and we read Sidra Shel She'elois, a series of questions Hakshuros L'Leida U'Kedushas Bechor, that have to do with birth and sanctity of the firstborn. She'elos 2 through 5 Miyuchodois L'Matzavim Shonim Barechem V'im Hi Yecholo L'Kadesh. We will see cases that deal with the birth canal, the, we'll call it the uterus and birth canal of an animal, and different situations, and we'll have to ask whether sanctity can set in. So we start with the first question. Boy Rava, holchu be'evorin achar haroiv, oiloi holchu be'evorin achar haroiv. In determining things, do we look at limbs and follow the majority? Do we follow the majority when it comes to looking at limbs or not? This question in and of itself is quite vague. So in order to figure out what the question is, the Gemara itself has a couple of stages in just trying to figure it out. And this is indicated with this double underline marking. And we've noted this also in the margin as Shlavim Levarer Mahu Mahi Hasheela. What is the question? So, I Lema Kagoin Shiyotza Roiv Bemiut Ever. If the question is like this, Rov of the newborn, of the Bechor, firstborn, came out Now, the majority was determined by the fact that a minority of one of the limbs is also outside. The komibayale, and the question is, hai mi'ut de baroi, the minority of limb, part of a leg, a fraction of the leg is also outside. Then that fraction of the leg adds up to the rest of the body that came out, putting it over the 50% mark. And now the focus is this mi'ut de baroi that's outside. We have in our markings a aleph, oi, beis. You can see we have this. These are the two sides of the question. So aleph, bosa rov de aver shadinan le. Do we ascribe the minimum, the minority of limb that came out, and attach it in our mind's eye to the majority of the limb that is still inside? So if you do that, you'll be in effect considering the minority that's outside as if it's not outside. And if that be the case, then the majority has not emerged. And if that's the case, then there's no sanctity yet at this point in the birth. And he would therefore be able to cut off whatever came out already and feed it to the dogs, because of there is no sanctity until the majority emerges. Or Basa Ruba de Ubar Shadinot Le, or do we look at the minority of limb that has already emerged and ascribe it to the bulk of the body that's also outside? That's Ruba de Ubar, the body of the embryo that is already outside. And if that be the case, then we do have a rove. So the Gemara says, Pshita de lo shafkina ruba de ubar the aznina basa rov aver. That would not be a question. It's obvious that we would not abandon the opportunity to ascribe the minority of limb to the bulk of the body that's outside, and opt to ascribe the minority of limb, have it attached to the majority of that limb that's still inside. So in the case that we just described as the e-lamo case, it would be obvious that if the majority is formed by the minority of limb that's also outside, that would be considered a real birth and a sanctified behor, and you would not be able to cut it and give it to the dogs. Ela, so then what is a question? Ela kagoin shiotso chetzio beroiv aver. 50% is outside. Now, part of the 50% that's outside is the majority of a limb as well. So you have 50% of the embryo mass outside, but part of that 50% is a, let us say, the majority of a leg that constitutes part of the 50%. The komibayale, and our question is, hahu mi'ut debegavoi, the minority of the leg that's still inside the mother, mahu lemishde bosor rov aver. Do we ascribe that mi'ut of the leg that's still inside, together with, do we ascribe it to the majority of the limb that in fact is outside? And if we were to do that, if we were to look at it as if the minority of limb that's inside is part of the majority of the limb that's outside, that would put you over the 50% mark. So that's the question. Toshma. So let's try to answer it. And we present a source. Yotza rubo hare ze yikover. That's the Tanaic source. My rubo. Ilema rubo mamish. If you were to translate rubo as simply the majority of the embryo is outside, and if, let us say, he cut it at that point, he would have to bury it. Well, do I need the source to teach me such a rather simplistic case? Ad hashta lo ashmina de rubo kukulo. Up till now, I don't know. Of course I know. Do you think that up till now I don't know that the majority is like the whole thing? So that can't be the translation or the explanation of this Tanaic source that we see in the frame. Elolav, rather, what must be the case? Kegoin shiyotso chetzioi beroiv aver. When it says yotso rubo, The rubo there is really a reference to rov of the aver is outside, and how do you get to it being a rove birth, a majority birth, by ascribing the mute aver that's still inside as part of the majority of the limb that has exited. And it says, you shall bury it. That would show us that we consider the mute that's inside as part of the majority that is outside. And that would answer the question. The Gemara, though, rejects this and says, loy, the case is not talking about that, but rather, kigoin shiotza rubo b'miut aver. So at this point, we have to add that we don't learn from here that holchu be'evorim achar harov, which was the original question. But rather, the majority has been born, and in order to make it a majority, the minority of a limb is also outside. The komash molon, and what this source is informing me, is the lo shavkinon rubo de ubor de behemo the azlinon baser aver, that I don't abandon the chance to have the mute that's outside ascribed to the body of the ubar that's outside and send it back in our mind's eye to the majority of the limb. So as far as the original question is concerned of holchu beivorim achar harov or not, that we do not see from this case. Let us take a look at the Rashi that's appropriate for this before going on to the next question. The Gemara says, loy, lo'olam loy holchu. We would not say that you follow the majority of a limb. V'lo shadinon miut aver basar rubo. And I would not ascribe the minimum of a limb that's inside to follow a majority of a limb that's exited. U'masnisen, the case of the Tanaic source is biyotza rubo mamish, not like the case that we were focusing on where half came out, and the half that came out involved the majority of a limb, and our question revolved around a minority of a limb that's inside. Do I allow it to be considered as if it were outside? But rather, the case is where the majority, a literal majority, came out. And in that case, Rashi goes on to say, what do I need to tell me about something that's so obvious? Where if rov came out, so we always know you go basar rov. Rather, kagon shoya miut echo min evora mashlim l'rov. The case has a unique aspect to it, and that is that in order to accomplish the rov, a minority of one of the limbs also emerged. The itzrich lashminen. Let's read that again. Kagon shoya miut echo min evora mashlim l'rov ho ubar. The itzrich lashminen, and I need this source to tell me dave ruba, that it is considered a majority. V'lo amrinon shadi miut aver shebachutz, and we don't say that we ascribe the minimum, minimum part of the limb that's outside acharov shebifnim v'leko leida, have it associated with the majority of the limb that's inside, and therefore there would be no birth. Elo shadya basarova ubar hoyo uba hedyo nofak, and that's the main point here, since it literally has already come out. However, and just to repeat ourselves, the original question of holchu beivorim achar harov, which involved a 50% birth, and the question involved the minority of limb that's still inside, do I ascribe that to that which came out? That we do not resolve from this, or that we do not demonstrate. In fact, according to Rashi's approach, we would tell you that we don't do that. Turning back to the Gemara, boy Rava, another question. And we've assigned a title heading to this section, Dvorim HaChoitzim Beleidas HaBechor. That's under our Nosei heading that we just read in the outside margin, things that are chotzitzin, that serve as a block or an interposition, a block between the ubar and the birth canal. It is to be assumed and to be known that the sanctity of a Bechor is... is gained upon its birth through a natural birth coming out from the rechem, from the uterus, through the birth canal. Variations on that will be the topic of our discussion. So, boy Rava, korchoi besiv mahu, betalisoi mahu. There are a series of questions. You can see we have little letterings between the lines, indicating the each new question as it arises under this diamond heading. In fact, if you skim ahead and you look carefully between the lines, you will see that we have letters up till a hey. And the truth is that actually we will have even more than that if we continue on in the Gemara. We'll notice more. The first question was Korcho Basiv Mahu. A sieve is a mesh-like substance that grows on the inside of the bark of a palm tree. So the question here is, let us say the embryo, before it emerged, was wrapped in this mesh-like plant substance, and while wrapped around with the sieve, it emerges. But taliso mao, taliso, say his garment, the owner of the bahar, wraps his talis around the embryo before it emerges. If we see these brackets, it encloses basically a line of Gemara. If we skip them initially, we read the gimel b'shilya acheres mahu. He takes the placenta of another birth and wraps it around this firstborn that's about to emerge. Then there's another question. Dalid korchosoi v'ochsosoi v'otsioso mahu. But before we get to that, we have to just point out the bracketed section. After we read the bays, which was betalisa mahu, the new question would have been b'shilyosoi mahu, that the embryo, as it's born, is wrapped in its own placenta. So the Gemara asks, "Bishul yosu urchehu." That's a normal phenomenon in the birth, that the baby, that the offspring, the calf or the lamb, is wrapped in its birth protection tissue matter. And as it's urche means normal way, so of course it would become sanctified if it emerges with the shilya wrapped around it. That wouldn't even be a question. Ella, the question rather is b'shilya acheres mahu. Let us say that our b'chor is emerging with the shilya of another animal wrapped around it. In all of these wrapping around cases, it's noted that the embryo itself is not coming into direct contact with the birth canal. Another question: korchosoi v'ochsosoi v'otsiosu mahu. According to Rashi, Tosfos disagrees with this pshat. He has a totally different approach. But for the time being, we will use the Rashi approach. There is a woman who wraps her arms around the embryo as it's coming out. So the Gemara in the brackets, though, wants to clarify what the circumstances are. Heichi domi. In all of these above questions, what was taking place? E de nofak derech reshe. If at first the head came out, and after the head came out, one of these above things took place, these wraparound cases then took place. Well, patrase, the fact that the head came out first, that is its birth. And patrase means peter rechem. Patrase, in this case, would be the opening or the firstness of the womb is accomplished already. And any subsequent birth would not be a firstborn. And that's because the head is a birth. The fact that the head emerges, that's a full-fledged birth. So that wouldn't really be a case. It wouldn't be any point of discussion once a birth is said to have taken place. Ella, so rather, the case above is that denofak derech margoloisov. it's coming out feet first, and before the majority of embryo comes out, one of the above things took place. One of the above chatzitzas took place. Chatzitza being an interposition. Another question: Bol osehu chulda vahotzi oso mahu. Here we'll translate: a chulda, some type of rodent, stuck its head into the birth canal of a creature giving birth, and absorbed the, like swallowed the embryo, and then took it out that way. If that were really a question, the Gemara says, well, hotzi oso ha afikte. Well, it took it out, and there was no contact with the rechem whatsoever. So, of course, there would be no sanctity if that's the case. Elo, the case that the Gemara is asking about, it might seem to be a rather fantastic, unimaginable situation, but we have to read the Gemara anyway. Elo bol osoi, v'hotzi osoi, a chulda swallowed an embryo, took it out in that form, with the embryo inside of it in the chulda, v'hichnisoso, v'kioso, v'yotso me'ilov, and then reinserted it into a into another womb. Actually, it then reinserted, could very well be into that very same womb. And after that, it came out through a natural birth. So there was this extraction and then reinsertion. Does the reinsertion start the birth process all over again? And if that be the case, then it would be a bechor. Or do we say not so? Now, if that case is not amazing enough, try the next one out. Hidbik shnei rechomim, v'yotza mizeh v'nichnas lazeh mahu. Let us say that you took two animals, and let us assume that neither animal has had its first birth yet, and the embryo went from one womb directly into the other animal. Let's say they were backed up one to the other, so the animal came out of one animal and didn't come out into the world because it was it immediately passed from one womb into the womb of the second mother, and then came out in a natural birth from the second mother. Would that be the bechor of the second mother, of the second creature, or not? Didei potar, the lav didei lo potar. Do we say that only from the first mother, namely the animal in which it grew and developed, it would be considered its firstborn, but another mother, no? Oidilmo de lav didei nami potar. Or does one say that even if it's another creature that happened to simply bear the child, even though the vlad, the child, the embryo didn't develop in that second mother, the fact that the second mother it came out into the avir olam from the second mother, that would be considered its bechor. This remains unresolved. Tekum. If I may take the liberty of saying that even though these scenarios may seem incredible, to put it mildly, nevertheless, if we allow our minds to wander or to make applications to things that we may be familiar with today, for example, the whole realm of surrogate mothers, where there may be an initial conception within one mother, and then the initial developing, let us say, the first mother is incapable of carrying it to full term, so the medical establishment has developed means of extracting this developing embryo from one mother into and placing it into another mother, and the eventual full birth or final birth comes from the second woman, who would we ascribe motherhood to? Without saying anything conclusive, because that's way beyond the purview of our Gemara markings, Daf Yomi Shir, nevertheless, it's certainly a basis for seeing the application of that which appears in the Gemara and one might think it's unimaginable, but yet it is imaginable when taking into consideration some of the modern medical techniques that have been developed and may come to be developed in the future. Using that as a background, one should gain a certain heightened level of respect and for what you see in what appears to be an ancient text with very modern ramifications. Continuing in the Gemara, Boi Rav Acha, Nif Tehu Kosle Beisarechem Mahu. As the birth took place, the birth canal widened, or some type of maybe muscle relaxation, and it widened to the extent that when it came out, when the embryo came out, it didn't have contact with the walls of the birth canal whatsoever. So how do we evaluate this? Avir rechem makdish bo'iko. Do we say the airspace of the birth canal, of the uterus and subsequent birth canal is what grants sanctity, and that is the case here. Oidomo negias rechem mikacha v'holeko. Or do we say that you have to have actual contact with the walls of the birth canal, and that you do not have here, since the it opened up so wide that it came out without contact. Boi mar barav ashi ne'ekru kosle beis harechem mahu. Literally, ne'ekru is the walls of the beis harechem were ripped away. The Gemara says, well, if that is the question, then there really is no question. Ne'ekru lesnu, if they've been ripped away, they're not around at all. And if they're not around, so then you don't have airspace of birth canal, and you don't have contact. There's nothing then to sanctify the Bechor. As we've said in the past, you need to have the rechem, the uterus, and the birth process happening through the uterus in order for the uterus and subsequent birth canal in order to achieve sanctity. And you don't have that here if it's been ripped away. Elo, rather, the question is like this. Ne'ekru v'tolu le b'tzavore mai. The birth canal became ripped away from its normal location in the anatomy of the animal and found itself wrapped around the neck of the embryo. And the embryo emerged with the birth canal, in effect, around its neck. So the question is there sanctity or not? My. Bimakomon mekachi. Only when the birth canal is in its regular location is there sanctification. Sheloi b'mekoim lo makachi. If it's not in its regular location, as is the case here, there would be no sanctification. Odilmo sheloi b'mekoim nami makachi. Or even if it's not in its formal regular place, there is sanctity. Boi mine Rav Yirmiyo me Rabbi Zeira. Nigmimu kosle beis harechem mahu. Rav Yirmiyah asks of Rabbi Zeira, what is the halacha if nigmimu? Now let's take a look at Rashi. Three lines from the bottom toward the end of the line, nigmimu, nital me'oive haksolim mibifnim saviv saviv. The walls of the uterus and birth canal are there, however, it's been eroded. The thickness of the walls have been eroded. What is the din in such a case? Omar Lei, Rabbi Zeira responds. Now his response, we call this a long answer. It basically takes the Gemara from this point, as you can see with our long answer marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, till the bottom line. Omar Lei, so Rabbi Zeira says, Konagis bebayo debayalon. You are touching upon a question that we once asked. In effect, Rabbi Zeira, you will see, is saying that your question is not the question we asked, but from the question, through the question that we asked, you will be able to figure out a response to your question. The boy, Rabbi Zeira. The Amri Law, another version, Bo Amine, Rabbi Zeira, Mirav Asi. Rabbi Zeira, according to this version, is presented as having asked Rav Asi the following. Oimed merubo al haporutz, v'yotza derech porutz. Another case, porotz merubo al oimed, v'yotza derech omed mai. Once again, we're dealing with the birth of a bechor, And the first case, number one, of Omeid Merubo Alaporutz, where more is in place than is not. That means the majority of the rechem, of the birth apparatus, is in place, and there's porutz, some has been ripped away. It just so happens, though, that the birth took place from, it emerged from the section of the birth apparatus that was ripped away, let's say porutz is broken open. The other case of is porutz merubal omei, the majority is ripped open. However, the birth itself, yotze derech omei, it came through the part of the birth apparatus that's still intact. What is the din in either of these cases? Now, ad kan lo ibaya li ela porutz merubal ala omeid, di'ika omeid ba'olam. Up till this point, we were talking about cases where maybe the majority was open, was ripped away, but there is a section that's still fully intact. And therefore there is room for asking the question, is there nevertheless still sanctity? Aval nigmemu lo komi bayali. But the case of nigmemu, that isn't even a question to begin with. We now turn to Omid Beis, the Mishnah at the top. Behemo shemes ubra besoch me'eha. An animal whose embryo died within its midst, with inside of it. Fahoishin horoy es yodoy venoga boy. And the shepherd who tends to the animals inserted his hand to the interior of the animal, into the womb, and touched the dead embryo. Bein bebehemo tameo, bein bebehemo tohiro, tohor. Whether the animal is of a kosher, an unkosher variety, like a horse, a pig, or be of a kosher variety, that's a behemah tohara. The shepherd is tohor, is not affected. Rabbi Yosi Aglili Omer betmeo tomei ubetohara tohor. The purity of the shepherd is dependent on the nature or the type of animal. If we're talking about a tome variety animal, then the dead embryo will communicate tumah to the shepherd. If it's a kosher variety animal, then the dead embryo will not communicate tumah to the shepherd. Before going on in the Gemara, let us glance at the topic heading in the outside margin under the heading No Say. Makoros sources the ubar meis b'mei imoi, a dead embryo within its mother, lo metame hanogeabo toch rechem imo, doesn't necessarily communicate tuma while it's inside the mother's womb. Ubar behemo tohora lecholadeos, we will mention that a embryo of a kosher variety animal, according to all opinions, will not communicate tuma while it's inside the mother. And ubar behema tameo, that issue of the embryo of an unkosher variety animal, machlikas tanakam of Rabbi Yossi. We saw in the Mishnah, this is a controversy between the tanakam who says that the type of animal is of no concern, the embryo will never communicate tuma while it's inside, and Rabbi Yossi Haglili, who does make a distinction. The Gemara, my taimo de tanakamo. What we've done marking-wise, you can see we have this squiggle underline highlighting the expression Tanakamo, and a few lines later you will see another squiggle underline, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, featuring him. So in the meantime, what is the reason for the Tanakamo, who just said that embryos do not communicate tuma when absorbed in the mother? Omar Rav Chisda, Kal Vachomer. Rav Chisda says we can apply to this issue the Kal Vachomer logic. Im ho'ila imoi la'tiro ba'chila lo to'il lo l'tahorei midei nevela. If the containment within a mother animal is effective in enabling the embryo to be eaten, and that, of course, is through the slaughtering of the mother. We know that if you slaughter a mother and find inside of it an embryo, the embryo is able to be eaten. So will the containment within the mother, that's lo toyolo zermideve, will it not be at least enough to restrain tumas nevelo from being communicated? Certainly it will be sufficient. Well, the Gemara says this piece of logic is good when you're dealing with a kosher variety animal, ashulchan behemot tahura. This is found to be true when you're dealing with a kosher variety animal, as the Kal Vachomer reasoning suggested that containment within the mother enables it to be eaten. Well, behemot tameya menolan, what about unkosher variety animals where that particular piece of logic doesn't apply? Omar Kro, we have a pasuk. It says v'chi yomus min habehema, and at the end of the line, the pasuk continues that says asher hi lochem la'ochla. So the pasuk is broken down and explained or darshened v'chi yomus min habehema zu behema tamea asher hi lochem la'ochla zu behema tahora. The pasuk is describing a nevela. And it mentions a behema tamea, and it mentions a dead unkosher variety animal and a dead kosher variety animal. Iskish behema tamea the behema Torah. The pasuk for our purposes is comparing the laws of behema tamea to the laws of behema Torah. Ma behema Torah ubra tahor. Just like in the case of a behema tahora, we know that the embryo is tahor, meaning it does not communicate tuma. Af behema tamea ubra tor. So too, in the case of an unkosher variety animal, the dead embryo contained within the mother will not communicate tuma. Rabbi Yossi Haglili mai taima. Now we turn to the other Tana, Rabbi Yossi Haglili, who said that this leniency with regard to tuma communication is limited to the case of kosher variety animals that contain dead fetuses. Now, why is it that he makes a distinction? Or if we can be more focused, why is it that in the case of a behema tamea, do we say that the ubar, the dead ubar, will communicate tuma upon contact with it on an internal basis? Before continuing in the Gemara, we see a new geometric form about to appear, and that's the triangle. We have also noted them with numbers to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You can see a 1 and a little bit further down a number 2. The Mivneh heading in the outside margin, the structural note, indicates two Makoros, the Rabbi Yossi Haglili, Shemetame. We'll be presenting two sources bolster Rabbi Yossi Haglili's opinion that when you're dealing with an unkosher variety animal, the containment within the mother will not prevent Tumas Nevela from taking place. So Omar Rabbi Yitzchok, the Omar Kro, the pasuk says, "V'chol hoylech al kapov, b'chol hachayo haholeches," and the continuation of the pasuk says, "Al b'chol hachayo haholeches al arba temeim heim lochem, kol hanogea b'nevlosom yitmo ad ha'orev." This pasuk that says, "Kol hanogea b'nevlosom," is a reference to the ubar, to the embryo. And with that in mind, we should also point out, because the pasuk itself said kol ha'holech al kapov b'chol ha'chayo ha'oleches. It means literally within, b'chol ha'chayo ha'oleches, within all chayos that walk on four. So when we see the word b'chol, we understand that we're talking about embryos. Now, the Gemara explains, Mehalche kapayim. Kapayim is a reference to feet, to the exclusion of split-hoof creatures. The pasuk is talking about non-split-hoof creatures, which of course you're dealing with unkosher variety animals. So we explain, Mehalche kapayim b'chayo timesi loch. The mehalche kapayim that are inside a chaya, I have rendered tome. And that's what the pasuk says, kol anogea b'nevlosom yitmo. It in effect says anyone that touches the dead embryo of a non-kosher variety animal will communicate tuma. However, the Gemara now is going to have a series of questions that focus on this source and to see how accurate this really can serve as a source. Elo me'ato. Well, being that that's how you're understanding the pasuk, namely you're saying mahalchi kapayim b'chaya temesi loch kolut b'mei para l'tamei de mahalchi kapayim b'chayahu. Imagine a case where you have a kosher variety mother. Kolot, though, its embryo is freakish in that the embryo is developing without a split hoof. Well, if that's the case, the pasuk should apply to this as well. The kolot would fall under the category of mahalchi kapayim. As we explained before, kapayim means unsplit hoof. And in the parah, that's living in an animal. So let it be considered mitameh as an example of mahalchi kapayim b'chayahu, as an unsplit hoof inside a living animal. So the Gemara, and we know that that's not the case. We know that a kolot b'me'e parah would not communicate tumah, even according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. So how are we to resolve that halachic fact with the pasuk that we are citing? The Gemara explains, mahalche kapayim b'mahalche arba. The pasuk, when it said that the embryo would communicate tumah, is when you have an unsplit hoof creature inside a four-legged creature. Now, the idea of four-legged is going to be explained very shortly as we go on. V'hai, the case of the kolod b'mei para, is mahalche arba. The unsplit hoof would mean it has 4 feet. B'mahalche shmoinehu, it's within an eight-legged creature. Now, what we mean when we say eight-legged, if you look at the split hoof as each hoof being 2 legs, in a manner of speaking, because it's a split hoof creature, it's like split feet. So for every 1 leg, it would be 2. So if you have a cow having 4 split-hoofed feet, in effect, it's 8-legged. And as such, the pasuk was not describing that situation. The pasuk that spoke about mahalchi kapayim b'chayo was talking about a 4-legged embryo within a 4-legged mother. Well, if that be the case, if it's, let's say, 4 inside of a 4, what about the following? Poro b'me'e gomol, lo titame. This too is something we know is not the case. But if you had the following freak situation, a split-hoofed embryo within a camel, which is a non-split-hoofed creature, and in this case the mother is a camel, and it has an embryo with split hooves in it. Well, that is a case, it's not a 4 in a 4. It's in effect an 8 in a 4. And as such, lo titame, it should not communicate tomo, because that's a case of demahalche shmoina bemahalche arbahu. That's an 8-legged embryo within a 4-legged mother. And we know that it does communicate tumah. So if we learn the pasuk the way we were trying to learn it, it comes out that we have some incorrect conclusion. So the Gemara answers, holech v'chol holech. The pasuk used the expression v'chol in addition to holech, and l'rabois pora b'me'i gomol. This inclusionary expression, v'chol, comes to include the case of a pora inside a camel. Well, let's continue with our analysis. What about this? Kolut b'me'e kluta. Here you have, we'll have to say, 2 freaks. We're dealing with cows. Genetically speaking, these are cows. The kolut is the unsplit hoof embryo within a mother, within a cow, but it's a freak. It doesn't have split hooves. In other words, the mother is a kosher variety creature, but because of we'll call it a freak of nature, its hooves are not split. And as such, as far as the number analysis that we apply to this pasuk, it would basically be a 4 in a 4, because neither the embryo nor the mother have split hooves. And litame, so a dead embryo in such a mother should communicate tumah, and yet we know it does not. But it should, the mahalchi arba, the mahalchi arbahu. But if we use the way we use the number analysis that we assign to the pasuk, it should communicate tumah. So the Gemara answers, lahachi ahani kavachomer de Rav Chisda. It's for this case that we benefit from the kavachomer logic of Rav Chisda. If anyone doesn't remember where that was mentioned, we have a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, and all you have to do is parallel this arrow with an arrow found previously, higher up on the page, where it's pointing to the line where Kal Vachomer was featured. And that Kal Vachomer said that if the containment within in the mother enables one to eat it, so if in this case you, let us say, slaughtered this mother, this kolot mother, you would be allowed to eat its embryo. And as a result of that logic, we said if it can, if the containment within a mother helps you to eat it, it certainly will help to prevent the communication of tumas nevela. Maskif lo Rav Achdavuye bar Ami. Rav Achdavuye raises an objection to our analysis. Chazir b'me'e chazirto lo letamei. A pig, which is a split-hoofed, unkosher creature, found inside a mother pig. It has a split hoof as well. So using our number analysis, you're basically describing an eight within an eight. And as such, it should not communicate tumah. In other words, the dead embryo pig would not communicate tumas nevela. It's an eight within an eight. And we know that's not the case. We know that this would communicate tuma, according to Rabbi Yossi Haglili. And our whole discussion, of course, is within Rabbi Yossi Haglili right now. So we've now run into a problem with our use of the posuk that Rabbi Yitzchok cited by the triangle number one, the Chol Holech Al Kapov, and we have to find a source for this ha'alocha for Rabbi Yossi Haglili Shita. Ela Omer of Nachman Bar Yitzchok, Mehocha. Rav Yitzchok's approach will be borne out by the following pasuk: Nefesh asher tiga b'chol dover tamei, o benivlas chaya tamei, o benivlas behema tamei, o benivlas sheretz tamei. The pasuk, in and of itself, speaks about one who touches anything of an unkosher variety, whether it be an unkosher chayo or an unkosher behemo, chayo being undomesticated, behemo being domesticated. And the pasuk is telling us that anyone who touched the carcass of one of these would become tomei. But this raises a question in our minds. V'china velas behemo tomei metame ubetora lo metame. Is it true that the carcass of an unkosher variety animal alone communicates tumah to the exclusion of the carcass of a kosher variety animal? The pasuk didn't mention nevela of a behema tahora. It emphasized behema tamea. But we know that's not the case. Ela ezeze, what is the pasuk talking about? Ze ubar she b'tamea tamei. Ubetahora tahor. If this pasuk was emphasizing something to do with the dead unkosher variety, so it's from here that we can see Rabbi Yossi Haglili's point that it's only in the case of an unkosher variety animal that the ubar will communicate tuma. A dead ubar in a kosher variety animal will not communicate tumah. That's why the pasuk was emphasizing the behema tameya. Well, this pasuk would seem to be conclusive. Umeachar denafka lei midrav Nachman Yitzchok. Now that we've learned out Rav Yossi Haglili's point of view from Rav Nachman Yitzchok's pasuk, the Rav Yitzchok lomali, what do I need Rav Yitzchok's pasuk for? The Gemara answers, Ilav to Rabbi Yitzchok, if I didn't have Rabbi Yitzchok's posuk of V'chol Holech Al Kapov, etc., Hava Mina Kule L'chede Rebbe Hu De'osa. I would have thought that the use of the of Rabbi Yitzchok's posuk of Nefesh Asher Tiga B'chol Dover Tomei is coming to tell me only Rebbe's teaching. Now, Rebbe's teaching will be featured on the next Omid. But for our purposes, we will tell you just that the Havamin is that I would have thought that Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok's Pasuk of Nefesh Asher Tiga is here to tell me only Rebbe's point of law, which we said will be featured later. Komash Malon, thanks to the presence of Rav Yitzchok's Pasuk, I understand that Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok's Pasuk is not limited to Rebbe's teaching, but that I can also learn from this the point that was mentioned by Rabbi Yosef Lili, that only the carcass, or the dead embryo in a behema tamea, will communicate tuma, but not in the embryo in a behema tahura. As we continue in the Gemara, we have a topic heading in the outside margin, the no say, and we indicate this goes until ayin aleph omet aleph. This will deal with the following: behema bechlal chaya, and chaya bechlal behema ulamai nafkamina. We find in the Torah terms behema and chaya used. Conventionally, behema is a reference usually to the domestic type creatures, domesticated animals, and chaya reference to the creatures of the wild. However, as far as halacha is concerned, we know that both terms can serve as an umbrella including the other, namely that a behema is included under the heading chaya, and a chaya is included under the heading behema. Now, each one of these two points will have significance in various areas of halacha, as will be featured in the upcoming sugya. So as we continue with the lower part of Ayin Amud Beis, realizing that the all of the details will be discovered only once we get to Ayin Aleph Amud Aleph, we continue with the Tanaic source. Tanya, Omer Rabbi Yonasan, Namti Loi Leben Azai. Namti is an expression of speaking. I told Ben Azai, Lo Madnu, we learned the following. Nevelas behemotora shemitama. We know that the carcass of a kosher variety animal communicates tuma. Unevelas behema tamea shemitama. And the carcass of an unkosher variety animal communicates tuma. Nevelas chayo tamea shemitama. We also have learned that the carcass of a dead, undomesticated, unkosher variety animal communicates tuma. However, the fourth category, nevelas chaya tahora lo lamadnu, the carcass of a kosher variety undomesticated animal, we have not learned that it too communicates tuma. Let us say you find a dead deer. Minayan, so from where am I to know that a dead deer will communicate tumas nevela as well? Namli, so Ben Azai told me, Kol Hulech al Kapov Bechol Hachayo Haholeches. This would include then the carcass of a Chayo Tahora. Namti lo, so I said back to him, Vechinemar Bechol Chayo. Does it say that in the Posuk? Falo lo Nemar Elo Bechol Chayo. Bechol Hachayo. That's the term that actually appears in the Pasuk, and that teaches me Lamahalche Kapayim Bichayahuda Asa. That's talking about the case of an ubar tome inside its mother, the embryo of an unkosher variety animal inside its mother. Nam li, so Ben Azai, upon hearing my rejection what he said. So Ben Azai turns back to me and says, Uma Yishmael Omer Bedover Hazeh. So he's asking, Ben Azai is asking Rabbi Yonasan, what does Rabbi Yishmael say about this? Namti lo. So I answered him, V'chiyomus min habehema. Zu behema tamea. What we're doing is we're taking a pasuk and we're breaking it down into a number of sections. Asher hi lochem la'ochla, zu behema tahora. So we have the pasuk opening up with v'chiyomus min ha-behema, when an animal dies. That's a reference to the carcass of an unkosher variety animal. And the hemshech, the continuation of the pasuk of Asher hi lochem la'ochla, that's a reference to the carcass of a kosher variety animal. Ve'lo madnu, and we have learned chaya bechlal behema, ubehema bechlal chaya. Chaya tahora, bechlal behema tahora. A kosher variety undomesticated animal is a subcategory of behema, of domesticated kosher variety animals. Now, we've underlined this because this would appear to be what we have been looking for, namely the halacha of an undomesticated kosher variety creature that died, namely its carcass. And if we know that the carcass of a behema tahora communicates tuma, or the carcass of a kosher variety animal communicates tuma, and we say that the chaya tahora is a subcategory of that, so then we would know that the carcass of a kosher variety undomesticated animal also communicates tuma, which in effect is what we were looking for. Now, we continue in the source, we also know chaya tameo bichlal behema tameo, that the unkosher variety chaya is a subcategory of an unkosher domesticated type animal. Furthermore, behema tameo bichlal chaya tameo and behema tahora bichlal chaya tahora. These are points that the Gemara itself will elaborate on as we continue on this omid. However, the source concludes, Ubaloshan hazeh omar li, and using the following expression, Ben Azai told me, Chaval al Ben Azai, speaking about himself, Ben Azai says, woe unto me, Ben Azai, shlo shimesh es Rebbe Yishmael, that I didn't learn by Rebbe Yishmael. It's worth noting that the style of learning of Rabbi Shmuel is featured in the Gemara Erevin Daf Yud Gimel, and also the same Gemara appears in Maseches Sota Daf Chof. We won't elaborate on that, but for those who are interested, it's recommended to look at those sources to see some more descriptions of Rabbi Shmuel's style of learning. As we look on in the Gemara, we see that the Gemara elaborates on the points mentioned in this Tanaic source, and of course their ramifications. But as far as our shiur is concerned, with this we conclude our shiur for today.